A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's asking about career paths in logistics and warehousing, specifically the ones that are actually going to survive the next decade of automation. Not the jobs that are disappearing, but the ones that are being reinvented. Forward-thinking roles, AI-integrated roles, the careers where knowing how to move things around the world meets knowing how to train a model. And I think the unspoken question here is this industry actually a smart bet right now, or is it all just waiting to be automated into oblivion?
That's the tension, right? Because logistics is simultaneously the oldest business on Earth and one of the most technologically volatile right now. You've got warehouse floors where robots pick shelves and humans haven't touched a box in 2 years, and you've also got massive facilities in parts of Southeast Asia where everything still moves by clipboard and shouting. The career paths are splitting into two completely different species.
Clipboard and shouting. There's a LinkedIn headline.
Here's what makes this worth digging into. The World Economic Forum's Future of Jobs report for 2025 puts logistics and supply chain roles in this weird category where job churn is projected at around 23% over the next 5 years. That's higher than manufacturing, higher than retail. But the net employment projection? It's actually slightly positive, so we're not looking at mass extinction, we're looking at mass transformation.
23% churn. So nearly a quarter of the roles that exist right now are going to disappear, but new ones replace them, and the total headcount barely moves. That's a lot of people being told your job no longer exists, but here's a different one with a title you've never heard of.
And that's the career question. If you're entering this field or pivoting within it, which titles stick around? Which ones are the dead ends? And which ones are the ones where the AI integration actually makes the work more interesting, not less?
Let's map it. If someone's looking at logistics and warehousing right now, not as a summer job, but as a career, what does the ladder actually look like?
I'd break it into 3 tiers. Tier 1 is what I'd call the operational spine. These are the roles that keep goods physically moving. Tier 2 is the analytical layer: demand forecasting, route optimization, inventory strategy. Tier 3 is the integration layer. This is where AI and automation actually live. And the interesting thing is, Tier 1 used to be the entry point and Tier 3 was something you aspired to after 20 years. That's not true anymore.
Because Tier 1 is where the robots are eating first.
Parts of it. The classic entry-level role is warehouse associate, picker, packer, forklift operator, receiving clerk. And the honest truth is, in highly automated facilities in North America and Western Europe, pure picking roles are declining fast. Amazon has deployed over 750,000 robots across its fulfillment network. A facility in Sacramento that opened in 2024 runs with about 40% fewer pickers per square foot than a comparable facility from 2019.
750,000 robots. That's not a pilot program. That's an alternative workforce.
But here's the misconception. The robot doesn't eliminate the human role. It changes it. The job shifts from walk 10 miles a day pulling items off shelves to monitor the robot fleet, handle exceptions, and troubleshoot when the system flags something it can't classify. So the entry-level role in a modern warehouse isn't picker anymore. It's more like automation technician or inventory control associate, and those roles pay better, require more technical literacy, and are harder to fill.
The person who would have been a picker in 2018 is now expected to diagnose why a Kiva-style drive unit is throwing error codes. That's not a small ask.
It's not, and that's where the career path gets interesting. If you come in as an automation technician, average starting salary in the U.S. right now is around $52,000 to $58,000 compared to maybe $35,000 for a traditional warehouse associate. Your next step isn't just senior technician. It's often a jump into the analytical layer.
Let's map that progression. Automation technician, then what?
A common path looks like this. Automation technician for 2 to 3 years. then either shift lead or operations supervisor, that's the people, plus systems management role. From there, you can go two directions. One is the facility operations manager track, which tops out at site director or regional director of operations. The other is the supply chain analyst track, which is where you start getting into the data side.
The analyst track is where the AI conversation really starts.
That's tier two. Supply chain analyst, logistics analyst, demand planning analyst. These are roles where the day-to-day is less about moving boxes and more about asking questions like, given what we sold last June, given weather patterns, given port congestion data, given a tariff change that just got announced, how many units of this SKU do we need in the Kansas City Distribution Center by July 1st?
Which used to be done with spreadsheets and intuition and someone who'd been there for 15 years, saying, I just have a feel for it.
That person still exists, and they're often right, but the tools have changed completely. Modern demand planning runs on machine learning models that ingest hundreds of variables. Point of sale data, social media sentiment, competitor pricing, weather forecasts, even local event calendars. If there's a Taylor Swift concert in a city, certain categories spike. The models catch that.
The analyst isn't being replaced by the model. The analyst is the person who knows which variables to feed the model, how to interpret the output, and when to override it.
That last part is crucial. The system says order 10,000 units. The analyst says, no, there's a port strike brewing. The model doesn't know that yet. We order 15,000 and route through a different port. That judgment call, that's the career-proof part.
What does that analyst role pay, and where does it lead?
Entry-level supply chain analyst, you're looking at around 60 to 70,000. Senior analyst, maybe 85 to 95. From there, the next jump is usually supply chain manager or demand planning manager. That's 110 to 130 range. And above that, you've got director of supply chain, VP of logistics, chief supply chain officer. The C-suite role is increasingly common. About 60% of Fortune 500 companies now have a dedicated supply chain executive at the C-level, which was not true 15 years ago.
The pandemic elevated that.
Before 2020, supply chain was a back office function. Nobody talked about it at dinner parties. Then suddenly shelves were empty and everyone learned the phrase supply chain disruption. Now, it's a board-level concern. The chief supply chain officer at a major retailer can make 350 to 500,000 plus.
The career ceiling in this field went from manager of a thing nobody thinks about to person who gets grilled by the board when container ships get stuck. That's a status upgrade.
The skill set has changed accordingly. 20 years ago, a supply chain manager needed to understand freight classes, carrier contracts, and warehouse layouts. They still need all of that. But now they also need to understand predictive analytics, control tower software, and increasingly, how large language models and computer vision systems are being deployed across their operations.
Which brings us to tier three, the integration layer, the AI native roles.
This is where the job titles start sounding like science fiction, but they're real and they're hiring. Supply chain data scientist, logistics, AI specialist, autonomous systems coordinator, Digital Twin Architect.
Digital Twin Architect. That sounds made up.
It's not. A digital twin is a real-time virtual replica of a physical supply chain. Every warehouse, every truck, every inventory position, every order in flight. Companies like DHL and Maersk have invested heavily in building these. The architect is the person who designs and maintains that virtual model so that you can simulate disruptions before they happen. What if this port closes for 2 weeks? Where does the system break? You test it in the twin first.
It's SimCity for global trade, except the stakes are actual millions of dollars in inventory.
The skill set is fascinating. You need enough logistics domain knowledge to know what a realistic constraint looks like, enough data engineering to build the pipelines, and enough AI understanding to integrate the predictive models. It's a hybrid role. Very few people have all three, which means if you do, you're extremely valuable.
What's the salary range on something like that?
Digital twin architects in logistics are pulling 140 to 180,000 right now, and that's with maybe 5 to 7 years of experience. It's a thin market, not enough supply.
What other roles in that tier three bucket?
Autonomous fleet manager is a big one, not just for warehouse robots, but for the trucks. Long haul autonomous trucking is still in the pilot phase, but middle mile, Distribution center to distribution center is further along. Companies like Gatik and TuSimple have been running commercial middle-mile routes. The autonomous fleet manager monitors those vehicles remotely, handles edge cases, coordinates handoffs when the autonomous truck arrives at a facility, and a human driver takes over for last mile.
It's air traffic control, but for trucks.
With a dash of remote IT support. Another role I'm watching closely is what some companies are calling AI Exception Handler, or Cognitive Process Supervisor. This is the person who sits between the automation systems and the edge cases the systems can't resolve. The AI processes 95% of purchase orders automatically. The 5% that don't match, wrong address, quantity mismatch, supplier, sent something weird, go to a human. But that human isn't just manually fixing things all day. They're analyzing patterns in the exceptions and feeding improvements back into the model.
It's a feedback loop with a human in the middle. The AI does the routine work, the human handles the weird stuff, and then teaches the AI to handle more weird stuff. Over time, the weird stuff becomes routine, and new weird stuff emerges.
That's exactly the dynamic. And the skill that matters most in that role isn't coding, it's judgment. Knowing when something looks off, even if the system says it's fine, that's extremely hard to automate. And that's the thread that runs through all the future-proof roles in this industry. The jobs that survive aren't the ones that avoid AI. They're the ones that position themselves at the interface between AI and the messy, unpredictable real world.
Let's talk about the messy real world for a second. Because a lot of this conversation assumes North American or Western European facilities with capital to invest in automation. But global supply chains don't all look like an Amazon fulfillment center.
That's a critical point. The World Bank's Logistics Performance Index, the latest one, from 2023, ranks Singapore first, followed by Finland, then Germany, the Netherlands, and a cluster of other high-income countries. The bottom of the index is dominated by countries dealing with infrastructure gaps, political instability, or both. In those markets, the career path looks completely different.
What does a logistics career look like in a market where automation is a decade away?
It's still a growth sector, but the roles emphasize different skills. Customs brokerage, trade compliance, last-mile coordination in cities without reliable addressing systems. These are deeply human-intensive roles that require local knowledge and relationship management. The technology layer is thinner, but the complexity is arguably higher, because the system is less standardized. In a fully automated warehouse in Germany, the system knows where every item is. In a market where half the shipments move through informal channels, the logistics professional is doing detective work half the time. Where's the container? Who has the paperwork? Which official needs to sign off? That skill set, navigating institutional friction, is also future-proof, just in a different way.
Navigating institutional friction. That's a career in itself.
It is, and it pays well. Trade compliance managers at multinationals make $120,000 to $160,000. Their job is to know the regulatory landscape across dozens of jurisdictions and keep the company out of trouble. Tariff codes, sanctions lists, export controls. One misclassification can cost millions in fines. And that's a job where AI helps but doesn't replace. The AI can flag potential compliance issues, but someone has to interpret the regulations, make judgment calls, and sign off on the liability. The liability sits with a human. That's not changing anytime soon.
Far we'd mapped the operational spine, the analytical layer, and the AI integration roles. What about the management track that runs through all of this? The person who starts as a shift supervisor and ends up running a regional network.
The operations management track is still the most common path to senior leadership in logistics, and it's evolving in an interesting way. The old model was warehouse floor supervisor, operations manager, general manager, regional director, VP of operations. That path still exists, but the competency profile has shifted. 20 years ago, a warehouse operations manager was evaluated primarily on throughput, labor cost per unit, and safety metrics. Those still matter. But now you're also evaluated on automation utilization rate, system uptime, data quality scores from the warehouse management system, and your ability to recruit and retain people who can work alongside automated systems. The people management gets harder, not easier, when half your floor is robots.
Because the humans who remain have higher expectations and more options.
They're harder to replace if they leave. Training an automation technician takes months. Losing one hurts. So the operations manager now has to be good at retention in a way that wasn't as critical when the workforce was more interchangeable.
What does the compensation trajectory look like on that track?
Shift supervisor, you're starting around 55 to 65,000. Operations manager, 80 to 110. General manager of a large facility, 500,000 square feet or more, can hit 140 to 170. Regional director, 180 to 220. VP of operations at a major third-party logistics provider, 250 to 350 plus bonus. And that bonus is often tied to metrics that are increasingly driven by technology adoption.
The person who figures out how to integrate automation effectively gets paid twice, once in salary and once in performance bonus.
The career mobility is real. I've seen operations directors move into chief operating officer roles at mid-sized companies. I've seen them move into consulting. I've seen them get poached by private equity firms to run logistics for portfolio companies. The operational expertise is transferable across industries because every industry has a supply chain.
Let's talk about the consulting angle, because that's a career path that didn't exist in logistics a generation ago.
Supply chain consulting is a massive industry now. McKinsey, BCG, Bain all have dedicated supply chain practices. But there's also a whole ecosystem of boutique firms, Invista, Fortna, Sedlak, that specialize in warehouse design, automation strategy, and system integration. These firms hire people with operational backgrounds, pay them $150,000 to $250,000 at the senior level, and put them in front of clients who are trying to figure out whether to invest in autonomous mobile robots or stick with conveyor-based systems. The consultant's value is that they've seen what works and what doesn't across dozens of implementations. They know that a particular automated storage system works great for high-density small items, but is a nightmare for oversized products. I've seen this go wrong before, is basically the consulting value proposition.
In three words, yes.
What about the procurement side? Buying and sourcing. That feels adjacent but distinct.
Procurement is a massive career path in its own right, and it's increasingly integrated with supply chain rather than sitting in a separate silo. The old model was procurement buys stuff, logistics moves stuff. The new model is the supply chain function owns the whole flow from supplier to customer, so procurement professionals are being pulled into supply chain teams.
The AI angle on procurement is supplier risk assessment. AI tools now monitor suppliers continuously. Financial health, news mentions, regulatory actions, even social media sentiment, and flag risks before they become disruptions. The procurement manager used to do a supplier review once a year. Now it's continuous, and the AI surfaces the alerts. But someone has to decide, do we switch suppliers based on this signal? Do we dual source? Do we renegotiate? That's a human decision, and a consequential one. Switching suppliers can save millions or cost millions.
The procurement career path. Buyer, senior buyer, category manager, director of procurement, chief procurement officer. That's a solid track with increasing technology integration. Category managers at large companies make 110 to 140,000. Directors, 160 to 220. The CPO at a Fortune 500 company can make 400,000 plus.
That's real money for a function that most people picture as the person who argues with vendors about price. The perception lag on these careers is enormous. Most people, when they hear logistics, picture a guy with a clipboard in a dusty warehouse. They don't picture a data scientist optimizing a neural network for demand forecasting. They don't picture a digital twin architect simulating port disruptions. They don't picture a trade compliance manager navigating sanctions regimes. But those jobs exist, they're growing, and they pay well.
The dusty warehouse guy is the brand problem of this entire industry.
And it's a recruiting problem, too. The industry struggles to attract young talent because the brand is terrible. Meanwhile, the actual work is increasingly sophisticated and technology-driven.
If someone's coming out of university right now, or making a mid-career pivot, and they're interested in this space, what's the smart entry point?
I'd say there are three smart entry strategies, depending on your background. If you're technically inclined, maybe a STEM degree or a coding bootcamp, the fast track is through the analytics and AI side. Look for roles like supply chain analyst, logistics data analyst, or even a rotational program at a large third-party logistics provider like DHL Supply Chain or C. These companies have formal development programs that expose you to multiple functions in 2 to 3 years.
If you're not technical,
then the operations track is still viable, but be strategic about which operation. Don't join a facility that's all manual processes and expect to build a future-proof career. Look for companies that are investing in automation. Amazon, Walmart, Target, Chewy, large third-party logistics providers. Get into a facility where you'll learn to work with the technology, not around it. Start as a team lead or area manager, learn the systems, and then either climb the ops ladder or pivot into the technology side after a few years.
What about the third entry point?
The third is through the compliance and trade side. If you have language skills, international experience, or a legal background, trade compliance is a niche with high demand and low supply. Every company that imports or exports needs someone who understands customs regulations. The American Association of Exporters and Importers runs certification programs. A certified customs specialist can walk into a $65,000 to $75,000 role with very little experience. From there, trade compliance manager, director of global trade compliance, and eventually into broader supply chain leadership. The compliance background is actually a great foundation because you understand the regulatory constraints that shape every decision.
You mentioned earlier that the industry struggles to attract young talent. What's actually being done about that?
Some companies are getting creative. DHL has a program called Supply Chain Talent that's essentially a fast-track leadership development program, 18 months, rotations through operations, solutions design, and commercial functions. Amazon's Pathways program takes MBA graduates and puts them on an accelerated track to general manager roles. And there's a growing number of university programs. MIT's Supply Chain Management Masters, Michigan State's program, Penn State, Arizona State, that are placing graduates into six-figure roles right out of school.
Six figures, right out of a master's program.
The average starting salary for MIT's Supply Chain Management Masters graduates was over $120,000 in 2025. These programs are feeding directly into consulting firms, tech companies, and senior roles at major retailers and manufacturers. That's competitive with software engineering. And the career trajectory is strong. The head of supply chain at a major company is a C-suite role with C-suite compensation. That wasn't true a generation ago.
What are the risks? If someone's betting their career on this industry, what should keep them up at night?
The biggest risk is commoditization of the middle. The roles that are purely analytical but not strategic. The ones where you're basically generating reports that a manager used to generate manually. Those are vulnerable. If your job is to pull data from a system, format it in Excel, and email it to someone, a language model can do that today. The second risk is geographic concentration. A lot of the high-end logistics jobs are clustered in specific markets. Atlanta, Chicago, Dallas, the Inland Empire, and Southern California, Memphis. If you're not willing to be in those hubs, your options narrow. The third risk is that the industry is cyclical. When the economy contracts, logistics volumes drop, and layoffs happen. It's not recession-proof, though it's arguably more resilient than some industries. Goods still need to move, even in a downturn. But discretionary goods volume drops fast. If you're in a facility that primarily handles consumer electronics or furniture, you feel downturns acutely.
What about the geopolitical risk? We're 103 days into a conflict with Iran right now. That's disrupting shipping routes. The Red Sea has been a problem for a while. Tariffs are constantly shifting.
Geopolitical volatility is actually a tailwind for logistics careers in a weird way. Every disruption increases the value of supply chain expertise. When shipping routes are stable and predictable, companies optimize for cost, and the supply chain function is viewed as a cost center. When the world is chaotic, companies optimize for resilience, and supply chain leaders become strategic assets. The more unpredictable the world gets, the more valuable it is to have someone who can make sense of the unpredictability and build systems that can absorb it.
Let's circle back to the AI-specific roles for a moment. You mentioned a few earlier. Digital twin architect, autonomous fleet manager, AI exception handler. What's the newest one you've seen? The thing that barely existed 18 months ago.
Prompt Engineer for Supply Chain Systems. I know, Prompt Engineer sounds like a joke title, but here's what it actually means in this context. large logistics companies are deploying internal large language model interfaces that connect to their warehouse management systems, transportation management systems, and enterprise resource planning systems. The interface lets a manager ask a natural language question, "What's the status of Order 4237 across all our facilities?" and get an answer that pulls from multiple systems. But the quality of the answer depends enormously on how the question is asked and how the system is configured. The prompt engineer designs the templates, the system prompts, the retrieval, augmented generation pipelines that sit between the user and the data. It's a role that combines domain knowledge with a practical understanding of how large language models work.
This is a full-time role, not a side task for the IT department.
At large logistics companies, it's becoming a specialized function. The job title varies. Sometimes AI solutions architect, sometimes conversational AI specialist, but the core skill is the same: translate supply chain domain expertise into effective AI interactions. I saw a job posting from a major freight forwarder last month for exactly this. Salary range was 130 to 160. That's a job that literally did not exist 3 years ago. And it probably won't exist in 5 years in its current form. That's the thing about these AI-adjacent roles. They're transitional. The tools will get better, the interfaces will become more intuitive, and the need for specialized prompting expertise will diminish. But the people who do these roles now are building the foundation for whatever comes next.
The meta skill is adaptability, not any specific tool.
That's the career advice for any industry right now. But in logistics, it's especially true because the technology stack is changing so fast. 5 years ago, the hot topic was robotic process automation. 3 years ago, it was blockchain for supply chain traceability. Now it's large language models and computer vision. In 3 more years, it'll be something else.
The blockchain for supply chain thing was mostly hype, wasn't it?
There are a few real implementations. Maersk and IBM's TradeLens platform had some traction before it shut down in 2023. But the fundamental problem was that blockchain solves for trust between parties who don't trust each other, and most supply chains already operate on contractual relationships with established trust mechanisms. The technology was solving a problem that wasn't the biggest pain point.
That's a good lesson for evaluating any new technology in this space. Is it solving the actual problem, or is it solving a problem that sounds impressive in a pitch deck?
The actual problems in logistics are often unglamorous. On-time delivery, dock door utilization, these are not exciting problems, but solving them is worth billions. I once read a case study about a retailer that saved $8 million a year just by optimizing dock door scheduling at their distribution centers. $8 million. From dock doors.
I'm not laughing at the money. I'm laughing at the LinkedIn headline. Dock door optimization specialist seeks challenging role.
The point is, the most valuable skills in this industry are often the least flashy. Understanding how a warehouse actually works, the physical flow, the constraints, the bottlenecks, that knowledge combined with enough technical literacy to apply AI tools to those constraints is the sweet spot.
Let's talk about certifications and credentials. If someone's trying to break into this field or move up, what actually matters?
It depends on the track. For operations, the gold standard is still APIC certification, now part of the Association for Supply Chain Management. The Certified Supply Chain Professional, or CSCP, is the most widely recognized. For the more analytical track, the Certified in Production and Inventory Management, or CPIM, is valuable. And there's a newer one, the Certified Supply Chain Technology Professional, that's specifically designed for the intersection of supply chain and technology. About 65% of supply chain manager job postings in the U.S. list at least one of these certifications as preferred or required. For director-level roles, it's over 80%. They're not mandatory. Experience can substitute, but they signal that you speak the language.
What about university programs? You mentioned MIT and Michigan State. Are there shorter, more accessible options?
Georgia Tech has an online master's in supply chain engineering that's around $10,000 total. Penn State's online program is about $30,000. And there's a proliferation of certificate programs. MIT's MicroMasters in Supply Chain Management is 5 courses, fully online, costs about $1,500. It's designed as a stackable credential. You can apply it toward a full master's later, That's remarkably accessible, and it's a deliberate strategy to widen the pipeline. The industry needs talent, and the traditional 4-year degree plus 2-year master's path is too slow and too expensive for a lot of people.
What about on-the-job training?
This is an underappreciated path. Germany has a long tradition of logistics apprenticeships. The Kaufmann First Spedition und Logistikdienstleistung program combines classroom instruction with on-the-job training over 3 years. The U.S. is behind on this, but it's changing. Amazon's Career Choice program pays for warehouse employees to get training in high-demand fields. Some third-party logistics companies have started their own apprenticeship programs for automation technicians. It's not the most common path to the top, but it exists, and I think it'll become more common as companies realize they can't hire their way out of the talent shortage. They have to build from within.
The talent shortage. How acute is it, actually?
The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics projects about 180,000 openings per year for logisticians over the next decade. That's a combination of growth and replacement. The supply chain management programs at universities are producing maybe 15,000 to 20,000 graduates per year. The math doesn't work, so it's a seller's market for the right talent. If you have supply chain domain knowledge plus technical skills, data analysis, system implementation, AI literacy, you are in extremely high demand. Recruiters are aggressive. Counteroffers are common. The bargaining power is on the employee side.
Which is not the story most people associate with this industry.
It's the best-kept secret in the job market. Everyone's chasing software engineering roles at tech companies, and meanwhile, logistics companies are desperate for people who understand both pallet optimization and Python.
Pallet optimization and Python. That's the podcast episode title.
It's not the most poetic combination, but it pays the mortgage.
What about the entrepreneurship angle? Are people building startups in this space, or is it all large incumbents?
The logistics tech startup ecosystem is vibrant. In 2025, venture capital investment in supply chain technology was around $30 billion globally, according to PitchBook data. That's down from the 2021 peak, but still substantial. The hot areas right now are AI for demand forecasting, autonomous middle-mile trucking, warehouse robotics, and what's called supply chain visibility, platforms that give real-time tracking across multiple carriers and modes.
Visibility is one of those words that sounds boring until you realize it means knowing where your stuff is, which is apparently still a hard problem.
It's shockingly hard. A typical shipment might involve a truck, a port, a ship, another port, a rail transfer, another truck, and a final delivery. At each handoff, the tracking data can be inconsistent, delayed, or simply wrong. Companies have entire teams dedicated to just calling carriers and asking where a shipment is. Solving that problem with a unified platform is a multi-billion-dollar opportunity. The startup that figures out how to make port congestion data actionable in real time, or how to optimize last-mile delivery routing with AI in a way that actually works in dense urban environments. Those are businesses that can scale fast.
Last question, and it's the one I think a lot of listeners are actually asking. Is this industry a good bet for a 22-year-old right now, or is the automation risk too high?
I'd say yes, with a caveat. The caveat is, don't enter the industry through a role that's explicitly targeted for automation. Don't be the person whose job is to do the same repetitive task that a robot or an algorithm could do. But if you enter through a role that positions you to manage the automation, analyze the data, handle the exceptions, or design the systems, you're not competing with the robots, you're commanding them.
The advice is, be the person the robots work for, not the person the robots replace.
That's the whole thing in one sentence. And look, the physical world isn't going away. As long as people buy things, those things need to move from somewhere to somewhere else. The industry that moves them is going to keep growing. The jobs within it are going to keep changing. But the fundamental need is permanent. That's a better foundation for a career than a lot of industries can offer.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In 1954, the Honduran government briefly renamed the country's primary tax collection agency after a Tang Dynasty bureaucratic office, the Ministry of Revenue and Census, because a finance minister had become obsessed with Chinese imperial administration and insisted the name would inspire greater efficiency. It didn't, and the name was changed back after 14 months.
That explains exactly nothing about anything. logistics careers. The old business of moving things around the world, now with more robots and better job titles. The takeaway seems to be that the industry is transforming faster than its reputation, and the people who figure that out early are going to do well.
The transformation is creating genuinely interesting work. It's not just about surviving automation, it's about doing something more intellectually engaging than the generation before you got to do.
This has been My Weird Prompts, with thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this, leave us a review wherever you listen. We're at My Weird Prompts.
See you next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.